This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Emily Silverman had always wanted to be a doctor, but in the middle of her residency, she realized she'd lost a part of her. She's always been a creative person, and she and her fellow residents didn't have an outlet to process the experiences they had working in the hospital. Emily saw that many of her experiences made for great stories, stories that people are interested in, and stories doctors really needed to tell. That's why she created the Nocturnists, a live storytelling event for healthcare practitioners where they can laugh and cry with an audience that understands. She joined me in studio to tell me more.
The idea for the Nocturnists came to me when I was a second year resident in internal medicine at UCSF. It was a pretty tough time in my life. It's no secret that residency is busy and not a lot of sleep, not a lot of free time, and a lot of time in the hospital surrounded by illness, suffering, and death. And it's a lot to handle emotionally, but also physically and intellectually and spiritually. And I got into this pattern where I would go to work and encounter all of these situations, some of which were really difficult to witness, although there were moments of love and beauty and resilience, but also a lot of illness and suffering. And then I would work these long shifts and go home and have no time to do much of anything but eat something and go to sleep and wake up and do it over again. And I would get in that cycle, and I realized that I didn't have any breathing room to process what was going on. And I decided that I wanted to create a platform for residents to be able to share their stories, initially mostly out of a desire to cathart and to have a therapeutic safe space where we could residents could talk about what we were witnessing unfolding in the hospital and how we related to that and how we processed that.
Mm. How do you choose which stories to tell?
Medicine is fertile ground for storytelling. We try to choose the stories where the physician or the storyteller put themselves at the center of the story. I think as physicians, our instincts are to remove ourselves from the narratives of the hospital and from our patients. And that's necessary because in the hospital, when you're working with patients, it's not really about you. It's about the patient and their situation and how you can help them achieve health or wellness as best you can. And that's even reflected in the way that we write our medical notes. They're all written in the passive voice. So, for example, instead of saying, I decided to start antibiotics, you would say, the decision was made to start antibiotics. And so there's this tendency to remove yourself from the narrative and to remain neutral from a storytelling standpoint, I think in part because in medicine, we're also taught to remain neutral from an ethical standpoint. It doesn't matter who it is that comes through the door. Your job is to be their physician and to care for that person. And so I think the baseline disposition of a physician is to be neutral. Mm-hmm. And it's actually very difficult to have physicians flip that mindset and say, you know what, this is a story about me. I'm not just going to tell a story about something that happened in the hospital. I'm going to talk about its impact on me and issues that rose in my mind, and did that change my mind about something or shift my perspective about something or remind me about an experience that I've had earlier in my life? Did I transform in some way as a result of that experience? And so those are the stories that I find to be most successful.
Were folks like signing up immediately? Did you have a lot of people who came forward? Your upcoming events are sold out. I mean, what kind of popularity has this event gotten?
So in the beginning, it was more difficult to recruit storytellers because the event was new and nobody knew what it was. And I think people are a little bit hesitant, especially physicians, to make themselves vulnerable in front of their colleagues and friends. In part, I think because the culture of medicine is one that, for better or for worse, holds physicians up to the standard that
we're superheroes.
Superheroes and
yes,
somehow above human needs in a way, in the sense that we, you know, don't need as much sleep or rest as ordinary folks and that we're working these hours. And so I think people are in that mindset at baseline. And then when you ask them to step forward and talk about their own personal backgrounds or the stories of leading up to how they became a doctor or vulnerabilities that they feel on a day-to-day basis during their work, I think it can be very scary. Mm. But I also think it's really important to humanize physicians, since we often talk about humanizing the patient, but less so about humanizing the physician. And that's something that I felt like I was going through as a resident, was this kind of slow, gradual process of dehumanization as I felt more and more disconnected from my creative self. And so...
Because you were creative before.
I was.
Before medical school, before residency.
Yes.
Did you feel that was lost for a while?
I do. I felt like it was lost for a while. The experience is so immersive and so formative, transformative, but that comes at a cost because you do go days, weeks, months without playing your guitar or, you know, talking to your friends and writing, painting, those sorts of things. They fall onto the back burner when you're really putting yourself in the shoes of caretaker.
Mm-hmm. You're supposed to be on all the time.
Right.
For somebody else, not yourself.
For somebody else, not yourself. And it's hard. And there's a lot of discussion about resident wellness and resident well-being because people are acknowledging this epidemic of burnout and depression among resident physicians, and they're trying to figure out how we can restore wellness to this community. And I think it's very hard. Mm. But that's why I think events like mine can help. It's not a cure-all. I think there are some underlying systemic issues that need to be addressed, but this is one avenue, I think, toward reconnecting with the human part or resurrecting the human soul.
That was Emily Silverman, host and creator of The Nocturnists. And here's a taste of what you might hear at one of the events. This is Dr. Megan O'Brien at the Nocturnist reading last year in San Francisco.
So you know how sometimes in medicine you have these moments where real trumps your professionalism? I had one of these moments when I was a senior on the cardiology service, and it's an interesting service, or it's unique in that it pairs you one-on-one with an intern. But we had a pretty good team, and we were doing pretty well until we hit a blip in the road one day trying to discharge one of our homeless patients to respite, which is where they can go to get a roof over their head and a bed as they recuperate. And I'll call this patient Mr. Miles. And I knew Mr. Miles pretty well. He had tight narrowings in his coronary arteries, and his heart was sort of big and boggy from the drugs he did and the alcohol and some small heart attacks that he had had along the way. And so anytime he got extra fluid on his body or anytime he did drugs that made his blood pressure go up, his heart would demand more oxygen than the blood squeaking through those little arteries could supply. And so I thought I knew him well, medically at least. We cared for him for the next few days, and every morning we would walk into his room and I would toss open the curtains and let the sun come pouring in and sort of cloyingly greet him like, good morning, time to wake up, get out of bed, sort of just trying to like will the hope or fight or something back in him. And then we would do our thing, and as everyone would migrate out of his room, I would stick around and put the bed back down. And every morning as I did that, I said, how about a shower today, Mr. Miles? I think it would really help you feel better. And I was serious about that, but he was also the sort of guy where the street like had built up on him and really threatened to keep sort of distance between the people who cared for him and his humanity. And so I would ask him this every day, and he would always respond to me, if he responded at all, like, no, I'm too tired today. And I didn't think it was just that he was sleepy. I had the sense that it was that he was like that at the core sort of tired that happens when you like have been sick for too long and you don't like really want to keep going. And the social worker, who was awesome, I think she felt this way too. And so she had worked really hard to get him to respite, to get a reprieve from all of his illness. But when we got the call that the bed was ready, it was 1 p.m. and they said he needed to be out the door to be there at 2 p.m. and there was not a medicine reconciled and not a medicine filled and not a discharge summary done, and all these things needed to happen before he got there. So it was this like massive Herculean effort on the part of the social worker and the nurses and the pharmacists and the medical students and the residents and the intern, and like everyone worked together, and we did it, and we got him out the door. We were like gloating, triumphant, and like high-fiving and like probably chest bumping. Maybe that's how it is in my memory. It was like really, really triumphant. And we got a call that he didn't show up. And so, like, I raised my hand, this really cartoonish, like, but totally genuine sort of, you know, symbol of exasperation, and, like, said some really colorful and unprofessional words to describe the feeling of being duped. And then I looked at to my right, and my medical student was right there witnessing this display. So I backpedaled and then offered something like, you know, I wasn't really calling Mr. Miles names. You know, I just, like, it made me feel better to affirm to myself that, you know, in all of our relationships, you have, like, the right to be entitled to all of your feelings. And I felt the same was true in medicine, and so I wanted to reaffirm that for myself and for her. So a couple days later, I'm post a 28-hour call, and I am dressed on Halloween, and I have green paint on my face and, like, this purple mask, and it's just, like, a T-shirt that has a shell on it. So it's, like, not my usual, like, creative Halloween costume, but it was, like, the best I could muster. I was at this Halloween party downtown. I decided that I had enough of this party and I was going to go home. But Uber was surge price, and I am morally opposed to paying $24 to ride a mile, so I decided to walk. And I'm walking through downtown San Francisco up Market Street, and it was an interesting walk. those things. And as I was contemplating, I looked to my right, and I didn't think twice before I marched right up to him and said, "Mr. Miles, what do you have to say for yourself?" And, like, I was, like, wagging my finger, like, dramatically, comically, and, like, I've got green paint in my hair, and I'm, like, peeling off my purple mask so we can see who it is, and my face is green, and he looks up at me, and he recognizes me, and he, like, extends his hand to take my wagging finger, and he says, "I didn't need it." And he, like, doesn't let go of my hand for a while, and I tell him how full of it I think he is, that he didn't need it. And I asked him what he did with all the oxycodone we gave him. He looked really, really comfortable. He said he just needed it for a little while, and then he offered, he was taking all of his medications, he still had them. He, like, popped out his ankle, which was skinny, to show me, to prove it, that the water that he came in with on his lower extremities or his legs every time he'd come into the hospital the last 6 times was not there, and that he was peeing all the time over there, taking all his medications. And I told him I was glad that was the case. And then I told him, "I don't want to see you in the hospital again." And then, of course, I added, like, "But of course, you know, if you need to come back, I would love to take care of you. And please look me up, and I'll say what's up." And he's, you know, he's still holding my hand, and he gets this, like, big grin. It, like, widens a little bit more, and he says, "Thanks for stopping by, Doc." And he pulls my hand to his face, and he kisses the top of my hand, and, you know, smiles back at me. And I say, "That's Ninja Doc to you." And then we part ways. And I remember as I sort of faded back into just a tired Ninja Turtle walking down the street home, you know, how much more beautiful our job is and how much more connected we feel to ourselves and the people we take care of if we let these moments of colorful realness shine through.